I've said this many times before, but no matter how many albums I store into my 160 gig iPod I carry around everywhere I go, I always seem to knee-jerk into listening to the same 20 bands and the same 50 albums. Yes, yes, I'm constantly checking out new bands and new music, but when you're far away from home on tour and for long stretches of time, sometimes familiar music can act as a security blanket when homesickness or weariness sets in. Of course, amidst my habitual Sabbath, Lizzie, Turbo Negro, and Melvins listening, I have managed to embrace newer bands that have become staple listens too. In recent years, it's been shortlisted to no more than 10 bands, bands that I carry rigorous fandom for, much like when I was just a teenager. Nowadays, having precious little time for that sort of band fandom makes me all that more diligent when I do latch on to one. Oftentimes, I have to remind myself that I'm in a band too, and maybe it needs a bit more of the attention I'm paying to other outfits. Bands like Church of Misery, Denava, Grand Magus, Shining from Norway, Eric Chenault, Brothers of the Sonic Cloth, and the Doom Riders. The Doom Riders are a band very close to my heart. I love them. Their album, Darkness Come Alive, from 2009, was my album of the year. And since then, I've quietly and patiently waited for their third follow-up release. It's been 4 years now. I met Doom Riders singer-guitarist Nate Newton, whose main gig is playing bass in Converge, 5 years ago at the With Full Force Festival in Germany. I introduced myself and tried to keep my cool and not let my fanboy side out too much in front of him, but I was very happy to meet and make contact with Nate. Having him on the podcast is a real coup for me. It's hard to not just meet up with people who live in other countries far, far away, but to record a podcast in the process is damn near impossible. In fact, Nick Flanagan and I attempted a podcast with Nate in April of 2012 when Converge stopped in Toronto to play with Burning Love. But there were too many factors happening around us. When I got home, I realized the podcast was unlistenable, mainly due to Burning Love sound checking downstairs. The only thing I was left with was Nate telling me that the Doom Riders had started work on a new record, so all was not too bad. Recently, when we played the Hurricane Festival in Germany, I made sure that Nate would have plenty of time and our surroundings be silent enough to nail down a podcast. Still, our window was tight. Nate had to get ready for the Converge set, and while we recorded, you can hear the strained sounds of a band playing in the background. That band was the Hives. I didn't mind too much since it just goes to show how chaotic it can be when trying to do these podcasts on the road. It's not bad background noise either. I take the Hives over most bands anyways. I hope you enjoy this podcast. It's with a member of a band that I am fully devoted fan of, the Doom Riders, not to mention the supreme enormity of Converge. Thanks to Blue Mic Microphones, thanks to Skull Candy Headphones, thanks to all the comments on iTunes and SoundCloud, and thanks to you for listening to Nate Newton, who is this episode's guest of the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. We should really get into this.
Let's get into it.
We are here at the Hurricane Festival. I'm here with Nate from Converge and the Doom Riders. We tried to do a podcast before, but it didn't work.
It farted out.
Yeah. And much like the first time, we were doing it with a band playing in the back.
Oh, yeah.
Last time it was Cursed. This time it's...
Yeah, it's the Hives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're doing a... We're missing it. But
we are missing it. Well, I saw a couple songs. It was good.
Yeah, I saw one song.
Is it Main Offender? Is that the name of the... It was their hit? I can't remember. I'm on my way!
Oh, yeah. It's interesting how long those guys have actually been around now.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
And like, they had, like, radio hits, like... It was... Was that like 10 years ago now? Yeah. Almost? That's crazy.
Main Offender, that was out in 2001, I think. Veni Vidi Vicious, that album.
We're old people.
God,
that seems like it was like 2 years ago.
I know, doesn't it? It's just when you're on the road, man, you just look back and you're like, 7 years? What? Seven years? It's like 2 years ago.
We were talking about that earlier today. What was it about? It was about something that we did in like 2007. And all of us were like, no way, that wasn't in 2007. That's like so long ago.
Yeah.
We were like, no, that was like 2 years ago. And like, no, that was 2007. Like, oh my God.
When I was thinking back as to like knowing that we were going to sit down and do this, I was thinking, well, when did I, like, how long have we known each other? Like, it was, I think, 5 years ago.
Yeah, it was it with Full Force
with
Festival?
Full Force.
Yeah. And you were there. Both watching Entombed.
Yeah. Which I thought was the fitting way to meet you.
It was perfect. Because I was sitting there, I was watching Entombed, I was like, fuck yeah, dude. And I looked over and I was like, whoa, that's Danko Jones watching Entombed. I'm like, that's awesome. Because I'm a fan. So I was
Thanks, man.
You know, right away, I was like, this is cool.
But when I don't know, I think I came up to you, you came up to me. You introduced yourself, and instead of saying, yeah, I just said, fuck, I love the Doom Riders, man. That was the first thing I said.
Yeah, I remember.
You were
like, aren't you in Doom Riders?
Yeah.
And I was like, what? You know who? Yeah, man.
I fucking love that band.
Thanks, man.
As you know, off the mic, I've fucking... Well, and I think...
That means a lot, man. It's like really cool when you kind of meet kindred spirits in this... fucked up little crazy scene we got going on, you know, like it's not often, so it's really cool when you do meet somebody that like you connect with on that kind of level.
Yeah, when I first heard the first album, I was like, well, someone's out there doing it now. Someone's out there. There goes my side project.
Oh,
I was
shut
like
up.
Fuck, this is, they're doing exactly what I would want to do. Like, you guys, Doom Riders are, to me, when anybody says like, are there any bands to listen to? I always start with Doom Riders. I got like five bands that I always, my go-to bands. And it's Doom Riders. I love that band, Denava.
Oh yeah, they're great, man.
I love that band. Grand Magus, I love.
Oh yeah. I don't have their new record yet though. I need to pick it up.
The Hunt.
The Hunt, is it good?
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
I feel like they've gotten progressively more and more like modern metal sounding.
Yeah, it's super Judas Priest-y.
Yeah, which is fine. I loved the first two records though, that sounded like doomy Soundgarden or something, you know?
Yeah, that's a great description.
Yeah.
Iron Will and Wolf's Return, I want to say.
Yeah, Wolf's Return is great. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the album they put out on Roadrunner to me was like the topper. It's a good thing you guys didn't put out an album that year, or else it would have been like trying to come up with a top 10. It would have been fighting all the way to the end.
I understand.
But you guys are, Doom Riders done. Album in the can?
It's finished. We're just working on the artwork. It's been kind of a long process with the artwork because everyone involved in it has been super busy with other stuff. Like Thomas Hooper, who did the cover of the last album, he's doing all the paintings for this one as well, but he's in the process of moving his family to Austin, Texas from New York. Ryan Patterson from Coliseum, he was doing the layout, but Coliseum is touring because their new record just came out. My wife and I just had a baby, so like all of those things together have made for a pretty slow movement, but it's coming. It's coming.
Yeah, I'm one of those Uber fans who will probably like go on Facebook going, hey, what's going on? Whoa.
Dude, I'm the same way. I'm the same way, man. So
that's
Thank
cool.
You.
And it's interesting that it's the artwork that's holding you guys back because of all your connections. Like, I think I got a connection for Florian Bertmer from you.
Yeah.
And he ended up doing a t-shirt design for
us. Yeah, I saw it. It was a good shirt.
Yeah,
too,
it was.
He actually sent me one. Or no, you sent me one.
I think I sent
you
one. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
I don't know where he went, though. He just went
Florian,
AWOL.
Dude, he does that. I love Florian. He's one of my really good friends. But he Florian is in the process of moving to San Francisco. And so, like, he's been, like, sometimes he's in Germany, sometimes he's in San Francisco. And it's just hard to get in touch with him sometimes. And then, like, I think not too long after he did the shirt for you, he had, like, a massive computer meltdown. And he lost everything. And had, like... He just didn't have any of his work anymore, and so
oh my God.
He basically had to start from scratch again. So
oh yeah, because I tried to because we put out a book, and we were trying to get I was trying to get in touch with all the artists who had made artwork for us over the years, yeah. the photographers and stuff, and I tried to get in touch with them, but I just was like, you know what, this is gonna be a shot in the dark, and it was yeah. okay. In the end, it worked out because the woman who did the layout never used any of the artwork. She opted for more photos.
Oh, that's cool.
All good. But I'd love to get Florian to do another, because Doom Riders always have, like, for me, like, the best merch.
Oh,
like,
thanks, man.
I got a Doom Riders hoodie. I got a Doom Riders this.
Fuck,
I got
a man.
Doom Riders fucking whatever. I get it through Shirts and Destroy.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you affiliated with that somehow or Converge?
Well, they're all just friends. Like, Shirts and Destroy kind of sprung up out of a little screen printing business that some of our friends started. Kevin Baker from All Pigs Must Die. He was in the Hope Conspiracy, and he's been a friend of ours since the 90s. And so they were screen printing stuff for us, and then they were like, you know, we should start an actual web store. And then they started Shirts and Destroy, and so Doom Riders was actually their first band.
Right.
We were the first band that they printed for. We were the first band that had a web shop with them. And, yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything to do with it other than that, but they're all close friends, and, you know, we...
That's cool.
We stick with them.
Yeah, I really love that website a lot. I actually stopped going to it
because... Yeah, I'm the same
way.
I'm
going to throw down $100
yep.
if I go on there.
Yeah, because they have, like, every great tattoo artist on there, and you're just like, fuck, look at all these shirts, god damn it.
Yeah,
you know, and it's like, I have so many t-shirts,
too many, man.
Yeah, can't wear them all.
Yeah, I can't. And it's taken up too much space. I've had to, like, kind of give some away and
yep.
get rid of some that I
yep.
don't. So yeah, it's a big deal. Getting back to the Doom Riders, of course, as always, because this is my podcast. I'm gonna talk about the Doom Riders.
Thanks, man.
So the album's in the can. Kurt did the produce
yeah.
the record again.
Yeah.
And what's your overall feeling about it?
I think it's our best, but
yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm the guy in the band talking about our new record. So
yeah, of course.
You know, everybody says that.
Everybody says it.
But I feel like, from a songwriting standpoint, I'm very proud of the songs. I think they're the best written songs that I've ever written. Personally, I mean, I shouldn't say that I wrote, you know, because it's the whole band, it's a group process. But I'm really excited about it. It's a lot less, it's a lot less metal. It's than the last record,
right?
It's much more punk, I guess. It's
right.
It's like a weird noisy punk, heavy, little bit of metal kind of record.
Cool.
I guess I don't know. I'm pretty excited about it.
You guys were on later.
Yeah, 10:15.
And now I have to admit, clarify. We've been talking about the Doom Riders. I'm talking about Converge. Converge, you guys. Converge is playing tonight.
Yes, Converge is on tour in Europe right now.
Now, how is that working with, like, you know, when I look at all you guys are doing all kinds of separate things. How do you guys even get together to do a tour like this?
It's fairly easy, man. Like, you know, Doom Riders isn't a super busy band at this point because there's kids and real jobs in the mix now. So like with either band, with any band or with anyone else's other things going on in their lives, we just say, okay, who's free from this date to this date? And you're like, I am. All right, cool. That's when we're going to do stuff. And then we just
wow.
work around that.
That's amazing.
So yeah, we're pretty lucky in that respect. Everybody's super easy to work with. Like, I mean, Converge has been a band for over 20 years now,
mm-hmm.
and so, like, we pretty much just, we've got it down to a science at this point. Everybody respects each other, and everybody knows what needs to be done, and we just get it done.
How is it working with a band member for another band in the studio with Kurt? How is that dynamic?
Honestly, it's really easy. I mean, Kurt is very easy to work with in the studio. Like, he, you know, like, and bear in mind, like, I've worked with him since he started recording bands. You know, like, my old band recorded in his parents' garage with him. We were,
right.
like, his first recording.
Right.
And, you know, I've seen him grow not only as just as an engineer and as a producer, but as someone who is much more equipped to sort of work with other people, you know. And so, like, he and I, we've worked together so much now that, like, not really much needs to be said. I just come in. He knows pretty much how I do things. I know how he does things. And I just give him a general idea of what I'm going for, and then we work it out. You know, it's pretty simple.
And you're kind of, you take the kind of the helm of the band in terms of, you know, songwriting and lyric writing and...
Lyrically, definitely.
Yeah.
Musically, it's pretty much a group effort. I think my strengths have always been in the kind of editing process and putting things together.
Arrangements and
stuff?
Yeah,
arrangements. So, like, you know, the other guys will bring a bunch of riffs, and like, sometimes they bring complete songs. Sometimes I bring a complete song, but usually what happens is there's, like, a pile of riffs, and I'm just like, all right, this goes with this, we can make this work, and, you know, like, we need to figure out some way to get from this to this.
Right.
And that's usually the way it goes. And because of everybody else's commitments in life, we don't necessarily spend a lot of time in between records writing a lot. So, like, the new record, we had a bunch of, you know, half-finished somewhat song ideas, but nothing really, really close. And so when, finally we just set a release date, or set a recording date, and then we're like, all right, we're writing a record. We have 2 months to write this record.
Yeah.
You know, and I think for me personally, having that makes me work a lot. You know, it makes me a lot more focused. So we literally just had a dry erase board. We hung it up on the wall in the practice space, wrote down every idea we had, and we're like, all right, we're just going to go down this list till everything's checked off. And that's what we did.
And when is the release date for the album? When
right
the
now,
artwork?
Right now, we don't know.
Okay.
Probably...
You know, I read about it in Terrorizer.
Oh, did you really?
Studio Report.
Oh, I forgot I even did that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't even remember what I said. Oh, I do remember. Holy shit. It was a weird day. Because, it's like, this is going to bum you out. The dude called me to do the studio report. I was recording, I had just finished recording the vocals for a song called Dead Friends. And that, while I was recording them, I had gone online and I saw on Facebook that a friend of mine was murdered.
Oh my God.
While I was recording the vocals. And so the dude called me and asked me, like, how's it going? And I was just in a really weird headspace, and I was trying to give him, like, good
Holy
answers
cow.
And stuff. And he was like, you want to talk about any of the songs? And I was like, that was the only thing on my mind. So I was just like, well, I was recording the lyrics or the vocals to a song called Dead Friends, and my friend Sean was shot in his skate shop, and I found out while I was recording it. And the dude was just like,
yeah,
okay. And I was like, sorry, I didn't mean to, I just got really heavy on you, I'm sorry. But yeah, so that happened.
Damn.
Sorry, I just bummed you out.
No,
you know,
no, hey, man.
I've had time to deal with it and move on. It was definitely crazy, though, you know, like, literally, and then, like, flurries of text messages right after that. Like, dude, did you hear about Sean? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, crazy shit.
Yeah, no, that is, what can I say?
There's nothing to say.
Yeah.
There's nothing to say.
No. It's with social media now, it's kind of weird, too, because when people pass away, sometimes they won't have enough people around them to clean it up for them.
Yeah.
And, like, their face pops up on people you may know.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That is the eeriest thing. Now, with social media, that's weird. That eerses me out.
It's really, really weird. I mean, like, I have a few friends, two of which actually are in that song, who their Facebook profiles are still up and running, but like, all of their friends still post on their walls, like,
right.
Hey man, I miss you, you know, like, and it's actually kind of cool to have that, because it sort of keeps everybody together and keeps their memory going, but it's also, like, strangely,
I guess it's cool if you're
depressing.
Friends with that person, so they won't pop up.
Yeah.
But it's like,
oh yeah,
the people
and you
know,
can't,
like,
you
I
can't
know,
add them.
I don't want to. Yeah, exactly. I don't want to add them. You can't.
Yeah, because they can't accept you.
Yeah.
And it's just, we're talking about Facebook.
This I know. So, I know.
How weird is this?
I didn't buy any of those last few Rollins records he made, and I don't always buy everything he puts out, but he came into my life at a time when I kind of needed him.
Yeah.
And ever since then, I just kind of check in on what you know, what Henry's doing.
Yeah.
And so it's meeting him face to face. I'd met him before. Zero response.
For me, the last time, well, when I actually met him and spoke to him, it was at a festival in the UK a couple years back. I think Sonosphere Festival,
mm-hmm.
which was a crazy day all around. But I watched Rollins do spoken word, and I'm a huge fan, you know, of his music, of his writing, his acting, everything. I think he's an amazing guy, because yeah. I can't believe how much output he has and how much energy, and like he's just constantly doing something, and like I envy that. I wish I had that.
Yeah.
And so it's inspirational to me. And so I've been a fan, you know, I loved Black Flag when I was a kid. I loved the Rollins Band, you know, like I wrote him a letter when I was in junior high school. I can't even remember. And he wrote me back.
Yeah.
And to me, that like didn't even matter what he said. Just the fact that he took the time to write me back.
Yeah.
Blew my fucking mind. And so at that festival, like I watched him doing his spoken word, and it was great. And like he was coming off the stage right after his set, there was a car waiting for him, and I was like, I'm gonna be that dude, but I just gotta say something
to him.
You know, because he wants to leave. But I was like, excuse me, sir, I'm really sorry to bother you. And he was like, yeah, you know, I was just like, I just want to tell you, when I was 15 16, I don't, whatever, I wrote you a letter and you wrote me back, and that really fucking meant the world to me, and it's something that stuck with me my whole life. And it, the way that I interact with other people, you know, like I just had this long convoluted thing trying to make this sincere point, and he's just looking at me like, looking through me like, I felt bad for him, because I know in his mind he's thinking, wow, this kid's trying to say something really nice to me, and it means a lot to me, but I want to fucking leave, you know? And I was like, I gotta let this dude off the hook. I was like, I just want to say thank you. I'm sorry. And I just turned around and walked away, and he was just looking at me like, what the fuck? You're a fucking weirdo, dude. But, I mean, I could tell he was thankful, but at the same time was like, what just happened? And he just got in the car and drove away. And it was like, I just made an ass out of myself.
I don't think so. I have a very similar experience. And it happened the day before I did the podcast with him. And I was doing spoken word at Whackin' Open Air.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I did 2 days, and he did the other 2 days. So it was a four-day thing.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, our faces were side by side.
Wow.
On the posters. It was like, I was taking photos and everything, sending it to all my friends. It was at the Hilton Airport Hotel, across from that airport. When he left the room, I just was like, it was like...
Dude, that had to be nerve-wracking.
Oh, it was like, mental gymnastics, like with a hero of mine who was ready to dismiss me.
Yeah.
It would have killed me.
Yeah. And dude, that's the thing. Like, that's why talking to him is so, like, intimidating. Because you're just, you know what I mean?
But you want to get in.
Yeah.
Because you know he's a great hang.
Yeah. And I'm just sitting there thinking, like, I'm a total idiot. I don't know how to do anything. I can barely fucking write my own name. And this dude is, like, you know, for lack of a better word, he's a hero to me.
Yeah.
And
dude.
So, like, I just want to make a good impression, but I'm just making an ass out of myself.
There's this t-shirt that I think I got from Death Wish.
Oh, the one that says like
Henry Glenn
HR
Ian.
Yeah,
I got that because I know what that means. That to me is that's punk rock to me.
Yeah,
that
sums it up right there.
Yeah, I don't need anything else.
The four food groups.
Yeah, you know, you could put Jell-O on there too, but then it's not the it's there's five. It was a Beatles thing. It was a play on a Beatles thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought that, yeah, that's it. Those are the guys that I go to, I listen to, and I, beyond the music, I, with the exception of HR, I mean, I, beyond the music, that have influenced me as a person.
Absolutely. You know? It's funny, I actually did an interview yesterday for a German magazine called Visions.
Yeah.
And they asked me about, I'm totally scooping them right now, but...
Was the journalist named Jan?
Yeah, Jan
Schwartz. Yeah, he's
yeah,
awesome.
He's awesome, man.
Yeah.
But it was about favorite records. And he wanted to ask me about my favorite hardcore record of all time. And so for me, that's the Embrace LP. And, you know, I was just talking about how there are very few records that I can, directly trace and say, this influenced so many aspects of my life, not only musically, but lyrically. It pointed me in a direction, like, totally molded the way I thought, and totally changed the way that I viewed the world. And still to this day, it does. Like, I still go back and listen to that record, and lyrically, it's like, it's more poignant now than it was then. Mm-hmm. You know, like, do not consider yourself free. That just the chorus of that song, as long as there are others held captive, do not consider yourself free. And like, I, you know, still to this day, that sends chills down my spine, you know? And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't even know where I'm going with this right now, but I love that record.
I mean, for me, it would be, I've said this before, I think three albums, like maybe Out of Step, My War, and Rock for Light.
Oh, dude, Rock for Light. Yeah, I mean, that's it. Yeah, I'd say Embrace, My War, Rock for Life.
Yeah.
You know?
I looked at... Because it fucked with everything that I thought was... You know, it just fucked with my sensibilities and just my perceptions.
Dude, Rock for Light was like... I remember the first time I heard Rock for Light. I was like... I think I was 12. And I got it in a cutout bin at the record store on vinyl for $1. And it was like, oh, Bad Brains. I saw them in Thrasher.
Yeah.
You know? And I got it, put it on, and was just like... Holy shit, what, I don't even know what's happening.
What is this?
And then all of a sudden it goes into I and I Survive, and I'm like, what the hell? And my dad is like, hey man, that sounds like my Bob Marley record, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, this is fucking crazy. Yeah. Like, I didn't know music could be like that.
Yeah.
And then, like, at that point, I had Damaged by Black Flag, and I loved that record. But then I got My War, and I was like, oh, this is good. And then I flipped it over and was like,
yeah, totally.
What the fuck is this? And like, I remember thinking, I don't like this,
you know,
but I want to listen to it again. I want to figure out why they did this. And then the more I listened to it, I was like, this is fucking genius.
I have to admit, I listened to Side 1 for years.
Yeah.
After I listened to Side 2 once, and then I don't know what it was. I finally flipped it over and I was like, oh fuck, where have I been?
My friend Ben in the UK, he has a tattoo that I want to get so bad, but it would just be ripping him off. But it just says My War, Side 2.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Fuck, I want to get that, but you already did it.
You know, we used to do, when we first started the band, we were going to do My War, like the way Pussy Galore did Exile on Main Street.
Yeah.
They didn't shit on it, but they just did like a crazy punk rock version of it. I wanted to do our take on My War.
Dude.
Like how we would do it from beginning to end, like being a, like a hard rock band doing that album, but
that'd
we never.
Be great.
It's one
Dude,
of
have
the
you
lost
heard the demos for that record?
No, is it the demo or is it the deleted major label version?
Oh, I have demos, and then there's a bunch of live recordings on this one that I have, and there's a live radio show of them doing My War.
Oh my god!
Dude, I've got to send it to you, man, because it is the most fucking primal thing. It's so much better, like. Rollins is just like a fucking wild animal on it, man. Like, it's unbelievable. I'm going to send it to you.
Like, there's some shit on there that, like, just no one's been able to come close to the anger. And it came to me at a time where I was so raging, so angry at the world for... I couldn't figure out why.
Yeah.
And here was a guy who was, like, beating me.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Yeah, like, that was the thing, you know? You hear that rage, and you're just like, this dude knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And then, to take that a step further and kind of bring it all together, I loved Minor Threat. I loved how pissed it was, same deal. Like, see, these guys are mad, too!
Yeah.
You know, but then I got the Embrace album, and I was like, this is why I'm mad. This is why the world's fucked up. And I read the lyrics and I was like, okay, it all makes sense. Like, now I know, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Now I know how I should be looking at these things and why I'm angry. And you know what I mean? It kind of gave me a voice.
When it comes to Minor Threat, it was the like pretty much straight edge, out of step, those lyrics. I couldn't believe someone was singing that.
Yeah.
Because I was coming from a metal, when Crossover was happening, and coming from the metal stream, and then punk was crossing over, that's how I was able to bridge the gap and get a Minor Threat album or get a Black Flag record. And when I heard, I was like, listening to it, I'm like, did he just say I don't drink? Because every metal band, it was all about being alcoholica and, you know, fucking getting drunk and trashed. And everyone who loved that music was trying to emulate that.
Yeah.
And I was always a step behind on that. I just was not really too keen on jumping into the fire.
I think, like, at least with me personally, I got into punk rock and hardcore after kind of the second wave in the late 80s started to die. And, like, it was all, like, I saw all these dudes that were older than me who were just fucking hopeless, you know, that were just hooked on drugs, alcohol, like, losers, you know? I hate saying it, but, like, they were going nowhere. And I just remember seeing them being like, I mean, I love this music, and, like, it, I feel like it's where I belong, but I don't want to be that, you know? Like, these guys are, I don't even know what that is over there. And then the first time, like you said, man, out of step, I heard it, and I was like, I don't have to be that,
yeah,
you know? And that, I was like, all right, now I know what I'm supposed to do. And, like, honestly, if it weren't for that specific time and those records, I don't know who I'd be today, you know? Yeah. Like, those formed the person that you're talking to right now.
Yeah, same with me. And I thought that was the most punk rock thing to do.
Yeah, be punk rock against punk rock.
Punk rock, exactly. Yeah. To get that concept. And even today, like, you know, just being a hard rock band, and, you know, we don't really play, like, punk rock circles ever. I mean, this is probably the closest thing, being in a festival with you guys and the Hives or whatever.
But it comes through in your music, 100%. I think that's why, like, immediately I liked your band.
I would like to think that the people who know could hear that.
Oh, I absolutely could. Like, because right away, I was like, there's, like, a real punk energy behind this. It's, like, not about being, like, you know, you're not masturbating on your guitar. It's about the songs, it's about the energy, and it's about the connection with the audience. And that, to me, is what punk is supposed to be.
And on other levels is like, well, you know, we're not gonna look the way that a hard rock band's gonna look. We're not gonna act the way a hard rock band's gonna look. And just at the end of the day, it's just fucking with people's established perceptions and sensibilities.
Exactly.
Is at the heart of what I think punk rock has always been.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely, man. And it's why I love your band.
The punk rock, it splinters into, like, fucking 25,000 different kinds of sounds. It's hard to, like, you know, it's like,
yeah,
jazz is jazz, or, you know, country music is country music.
Yeah.
But, like, punk is fucking... So
punk is less about the sound and more about the attitude behind it.
The attitude. And, you know, whether other, you know, punk rock bands or other people can really hear the attitude in the music or the presentation... Whether, you know, I've always said this, like, behind the scenes, we have made this hard rock band based on, like, a foundation set by, like, Discord Records and all those DC bands, and just the way, like, that's why it goes back to Ian MacKay. Is like, to me, Ian is like, I don't know how I'd be conducting myself or being if it wasn't for Ian MacKay.
Right. Yeah.
And I know he doesn't care to have that as the burden, you know, with all these people.
I mean, he just did what he did, and that's that.
But it's, like, undeniable, man.
It's undeniable, and I'm thankful for it. I'm thankful that there was somebody...
A
role model that could give, like, you know... what am I trying to say? Like, an idea of how someone can act outside of the establishment... And still, like,
be cool
and be intelligent.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, like, you can't fuck with Ian. You know, there were plenty of dudes back then who, you know, wrote some great records, but you could just be like, yeah, but he's a fucking tool. Like, look at, you know what I mean? Dude, like, he's doing this because there's nowhere else for him to go. Like, it's either this, join the army, or go to jail.
Yeah.
You know? Or, like, whereas with Ian, it's like, Ian MacKaye could have done anything he wanted to do. Anything. And he chose to do this because it's what was in his heart. And he did it in an intelligent, ethical way. And not a lot of people did that. And so, you could, like, he was so sincere, you could see it. You know, even as a kid, I could see it. And I was like, that's what I want, right there. Like,
yeah.
I don't care if I'm ever rich. I don't care if anybody gives a shit about anything I've ever done. If people can say even that I've been even remotely like these people, then I feel like I've been successful.
It translates even into, like, how I treat other bands, people around me, you know, in business and personal.
Yeah.
It bleeds in every aspect that sometimes I catch myself going, I don't think Ian would approve, dude. You know, like,
I mean, that's
that inner dialogue in my head.
Yeah.
It's,
I mean, and I think that's a valid.
It's crazy. It's crazy talk.
It sounds weird
it to sounds
people
weird.
Who don't come from this kind of background, but, like, I think it's a valid way of looking at things. You know, like, I'm sure that Ian MacKaye would hear this and just be like, oh, God, Jesus. Shut up, you fucking dorks.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, if for better or for worse, here was a person who set an example of how you can do things the right way.
Yeah.
And, I mean, really, there's no right way. But in a way that, at the end of the day, you can walk away from it and feel like you didn't do something shitty. You didn't shit all over other people. You know what I mean? And ultimately, you can walk away and say, all right, man, like, I feel good about what I've done. And, I mean, they took it to the, you know, Fugazi and whoever took it, you know, to extremes that, like,
I can't
do, you know? Like,
I can't do it, man.
I mean, I have so much respect for it, though, you know?
But not everyone has the luxury of being Ian MacKaye. That's how I've justified certain things and decisions we've done.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, look, like, this is me talking to myself. I'm like, you're not Ian MacKaye, and if you were, you can afford to do that because you've got all this cred and you've got all this, you know, reputation and you've established, but you're just this little dude, man, like, trying to get by.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to make excuses, but sometimes...
No, you know, dude, I mean, like...
It's not 1982 anymore.
Yeah, and, you know, when you're playing music, and, you know, I hesitate to call it a career, but...
Even word usage like that, I grapple with, but
yeah,
I, you know...
Absolutely, but, you know, like, when you're doing this and, like, as... You know, it's kind of shitty to say, but when you sometimes, when you do have to depend on it to pay the bills, sometimes you do things that, you know, they don't necessarily 100% sit right with you.
Yep.
And I've done things like that.
Same here.
You know, and, like, I look at them all as learning experiences and say, okay, I did that. Don't need to do it again. I would have been a hypocrite if I didn't try it.
That's how I see it too. I don't think I've ever done anything where I couldn't look myself in the mirror. I know.
Yeah.
I've always been able to justify it somehow, find, like, the reasoning behind it.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, doing kind of like a more, the music we do has the potential to be more widely accepted. You get offers and opportunities that, you know, you as, like, you know, 15-year-old punk rocker would have just, like, gone, you're fucking, you know.
Yeah, fuck off, you wanker.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes you can, you know, figure it out. It makes sense to you. But always, as a marker, is Ian MacKaye.
Yeah.
Henry's right there behind him, but, like, it's Ian. And then for me, it's, like, Chuck D as well. Like, Chuck D, man.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Oh, jeez. I saw that guy.
Speaks the truth.
Yeah.
Always.
Newark. I saw that guy walk just right by us at Newark, and we made eye contact. I didn't even put out my hand to shake. I just stood up, like I think you're supposed to
when royalty walks by.
Royalty, like, some nobility walks by. Yeah, I just did that as an odd. I'm like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
This is crazy.
Oh, hey, Chuck D.
I didn't want to meet him. I just wanted to stand up and just...
Yeah.
It was so funny. But, yeah, Chuck D would be one of those dudes as well that I throw in there.
Oh, dude, he's He's the man.
Yeah. There's a few other people. I gotta jog my memory, but these are the guys in music that I that come to mind first. But
yeah.
Oh, it's funny how every fucking time, it always just ends up talking. We either end up talking about Danzig or Ian or Henry on this podcast.
Hey, that's fine, man. Those are, you know, the staples.
But you know, Damien from Fucked Up, he said something that I actually totally agree with, and I do myself. Is like a background in punk rock is a good marker for you know, when you know that someone's got a background in punk rock, it means that they've kind of like, they're a little more humbler. They might have more humbler tendencies just because
absolutely.
Of how the punk rock scene is just, they police themselves so much to the point where you can't help but have your ego driven out of you.
Yeah, you gotta have your ego checked.
Yeah,
you know,
constantly.
And like that's a big part of coming out of the punk scene.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's the same thing for me. Like, short, quick story. When that same day that I met Henry Rollins at Sonosphere Festival, Alice in Chains played, and it was with the new singer, Will. I've never been an Alice in Chains fan. You know, it's just not my thing, whatever.
Yeah.
No big deal. If you're into it, cool. You know, I can respect that. I can understand why. It's just not my thing. And so I was walking around backstage trying to find catering, and I was wearing my old Blast shirt. And this dude walks up to me, and he's like, "Hey, man, that's an original shirt, dude. That's like old as shit." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, it's real old." And he was like, "Fuck, man, let me look at that thing, you know?" And he's like walking around me, like pinching on my shirt. He's like, "Dude, this is from the tour." And I'm like, yeah, it's an old one. He's like, "Fuck, man, that's amazing. I played guitar on that record." And I was like, it's In My Blood shirt.
Yeah,
and I was like, "What?" And he was like, "Yeah, dude, I was in that band, man. I was only in the band for a little while, but I played second guitar on that record. You know, I wrote some of those songs." I was like, "Fuck, that's amazing, dude." And I talked to him for a minute, and he's like, "Yeah, man, yeah. I used to play in this other band called Neon Christ." And I was like, "You were in Neon Christ? Like, holy shit." You know, and we're just talking about hardcore. And he was like, "Oh, I'm Will, dude." And I'm like, "Oh, I'm Nate. Nice to meet you." And I was like, "All right, dude. Pleasure meeting you. See you later." No idea who he was. And then a little bit later, I'm on our bus, and our bus is we can see the main stage, and Alice in Chains starts playing. And I'm like, "Oh, Alice in Chains is playing, huh?" And some of the other dudes are like, "Oh, I'm going to go watch them, dude." And I'm like, "Eh." And I look out the window, and there's that dude singing for Alice in Chains. And I was like, "Holy fucking shit, dude."
Fuck, man.
The guitarist from Neon Christ and Blast sings for Alice in Chains. Like, that just completely blew my fucking mind. And I was like, okay, now I have such a newfound respect for those dudes.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, totally.
So fucking cool.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then the other
day,
I didn't
know that.
Yeah,
I didn't know he was in Blast.
Blew my mind. And the fact that he didn't even say, "I'm here with Alice in Chains." He was just like, "Oh yeah, dude, I'm fucking..." We just talked about hardcore. So cool. And then the other day, we played a festival. We played Download in England. And we're just sitting at our van, we're like way on the other side of the festival. We're waiting on like the trolley or whatever to take us to the you know, the festival grounds or whatever. And Duff McKagan just walks right up, and he's just like, "Hey, what's up, guys? You guys are Converge." And I'm like, "You're fucking Duff McKagan."
Duff rules.
Yeah, and he's just like, "Oh man, you know, we were just playing shows and like, saw this dude that just had your artwork tattooed all over him, man. It was so cool." And I was like, "This is Duff McKagan." And like, what I wanted to say was, "Dude, I love the Farts." You know, like,
yes.
His band with Blaine from The Accused. And like, I wanted to be, "Hey man, I'm down. I know all about you." But like, I couldn't even manage to spit out a word. I was like so dumbfounded that Duff McKagan walked up to us and started talking to us. He knew who we were.
Totally.
And I was blown away by that.
A similar thing with Duff. Like, he came up to me and he knew who we were, and it was fucking amazing.
Yeah, like, that's like, wow, man. Like,
you gotta hear the podcast Damien and I did with Duff.
Really?
Yeah,
we did it
at Soundwave. We did it with Duff.
Wow.
And he made Damien, who's like a fountain of punk rock knowledge. I'm just kind of like keeping quiet while he... And he made Guns N' Roses sound like Duff's side project.
That's awesome.
He was just throwing out bands, and you can't see it on the podcast, but Duff's face was like, who is this guy?
Yeah. That's awesome.
He kind of surprised him a bit, but yeah, it was cool. That was cool. And I'm glad. Yeah. Duff is one of those dudes who's like, he's the man to me. He's the man.
He's real.
He's the real.
You know what I mean? And that's
deal.
That exactly like you were saying, you know, like he came out of the punk world,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
you know, and like he gets it.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
It's just so fucking cool to see somebody that's been, you know, at the bottom all the way to the top, like where no one ever gets to go, and is still completely just like, hey, yeah, man, cool. Yeah. I like your band. And you're like, what? You? You know who we are?
And like, for me, like someone who revolves in the hard rock world more than the punk rock world these days, he is someone I look to go, well,
he did it.
Here's another dude. So
yeah.
I'm not alone in this. You know,
he's not alone.
Yeah.
So that was a mind-blowing experience a couple days ago.
The fuck that happened? Oh, yeah. You said download a couple days ago.
Like, literally, it was like last week.
Fuck.
So
that's awesome.
It was funny because I was sitting in the back of the van half asleep. Like, and then some dude walks up, hey guys, and I'm just like, the fuck is this? He's like, hey guys, I'm Duff. And I'm like, I just kind of lift up my head and look out the door, and I'm like, yeah, that's Duff. Holy shit. Fuck. You know?
Yeah. Killer, man.
There you go. Yeah. I think that's a good spot.
Oh, it's to end the podcast on Duff McKagan?
Yeah.
I'll take any day.
No complaints. Right
awesome.
On. Thanks, brother.
Thanks, man. Have a good show tonight, too.
Thank you.
Fuck yeah.